This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Greer.
Now it's time to say good night.
Feeling sleepy? It could be the song, or maybe you just didn't sleep well last night. Sleep problems affect millions of Americans, often more seriously than we realize. So we've asked a doctor who's been studying sleep for some 20 years to clue us in. Neurologist, medical researcher, and sleep treatment specialist Chris Winter is here to help us understand why people sleep too much, don't sleep enough, or just can't seem to get to sleep at all.
Good night, everybody. Everybody, everywhere. Good night.
Ignore Ringo. Stay awake. Dr. Winter is ready to take your questions right after the news. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. Sleep is our topic today. If you've got a question about it for our medical specialist guest, a problem with it that you would like him to hear, or even the story of how you managed to solve difficulties with sleep all on your own, you can reach us at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. Or if you prefer, you can post to us on the Virginia Insight Facebook page. Medical doctor Chris Winter is a neurologist, a sleep treatment specialist in private practice in Charlottesville, as well as director of Martha Jefferson Hospital's Sleep Treatment Center. He is also author of numerous research articles on sleep and has a new book in the works. Dr. Winter, thank you for making time for us.
Thank you for having me on this terribly blustery, cold winter day.
Well, actually, I have just two questions for you. Hopefully, there are people listening who have lots of others as well, and they're getting to their phones at this very moment to dial 888-WMRA-TALK, because if your answer to my first two questions are short, we might otherwise just have to play some soothing music so everybody can take a nap. But let me start here, Chris, just with these two. What causes sleep, and what causes not sleeping?
Great question. And I think that great questions. I think that what you've asked sort of divides the individuals who come to see me into the two sort of main groups of sleep dysfunction. The individuals who come to see me who are having trouble with not being able to sleep as much as they want. And there's the group of individuals who are saying, I'm having trouble because I'm sleeping way too much. I'm falling asleep driving. I'm falling asleep at my office or at work. So I think that when we talk about sleep today and answer some questions and get into some good stories about sleep, that these are sort of the two teams, the east and west, so to speak. So the people who are the sleeping too much and the people who are not sleeping enough. What makes us sleep is pretty simple. There are really sort of two systems in our brain that are important for that. One is what we call our homeostatic system. It's the system that the longer we are awake, the more likely we are to sleep. Same thing as sort of the longer we go without food, the more driven and preoccupied our little brains become in trying to find something to eat. And the second system really being the circadian system, the light and dark. And our brains are sort of hardwired that when we see light, we don't really want to sleep, because our brains don't make a lot of melatonin when we see light. So between our reactions to the sun coming up and the sun going down, or the artificial lighting we're exposed to, and this drive to sleep, this homeostatic drive to sleep, which is incidentally is the probably the accumulation of a chemical called adenosine, which is what caffeine blocks. Those are the two things that really make us want to sleep. Hopefully not this interview, but those two things make us want to sleep. And those things work. They work really well. And so one of the things that we struggle with our patients in that second group who say they can't sleep is really making sure that they understand that this is a pretty foolproof system and that we are going to sleep. We may not sleep well, every one of us, but we all do sleep. It's a fundamental tenet of life. And so getting patients to sort of buy into the fact that you are going to sleep is really important, because when you start to doubt your ability to sleep and get upset and nervous as bedtime starts to come closer and closer, that's sort of the beginning of the end for a lot of people with their sleep. They tell me all the time, Chris, you know, I'm sitting there watching TV at 10 o'clock and CSI Miami's on and they're getting ready to reveal who did it and I fell asleep. You know, I have trouble staying awake for the end of my show. But if I get up and I go 20 feet into my bedroom, I am wide awake. Why is that? And a lot of times it has to do with the fact that when you're watching CSI, you're not trying to sleep. You're trying to figure out who committed the crime. And so your brain is sort of preoccupied with that and not trying to go to sleep. However, when you get up and go to your bedroom and you're there under the quilt and you see that picture on the wall and you see the pillow and the person there beside you, if that's as the case may be, that's the place where you've conditioned yourself to not be able to sleep. And so the stress and anxiety starts to build and boom, there you are wide awake.
The conditioning that you talk about, is that at all related to this concept that we sometimes hear about, Chris, called sleep hygiene?
It is. Sleep hygiene is basically making sure that the things that you can control that might affect your sleep are controlled. So, for instance, if an individual is a shift worker and they come home in the morning to do their sleep period, we want to make sure that their room is dark, that their room is comfortable from a sheet perspective, the sheets that are on their bed, to the temperature of the room. We want to make sure it's reasonably quiet, which is difficult for shift workers, which is a completely different subject because people are calling them all through the day because that's sort of what we do during standard business hours. But sleep hygiene is making sure that the caffeine is controlled. If you're somebody who smokes and you really shouldn't be, that you're not doing it right before you go to sleep. All these little small things that you can control that you're controlling. And that can help a small group of people.
Give me a couple of specifics on two things you just mentioned. Caffeine, many people use caffeine to help them get awake.
Absolutely.
Early in the day.
You bet.
Is there if say your usual wake up time is 6 or 7 a.m., and your usual going to sleep time is 10, 11, 11:30 at night. Within those kind of time frames, is there a time after which you should not have caffeine, like 6 hours before bed, 12 hours before bed?
I mean, generally speaking, what I would tell a patient if they're having trouble with it, if somebody says, I like to have a cup of coffee after I eat dinner and I sleep well and I feel great during the day, I'm not going to be too concerned about it. If an individual's struggling to sleep, we typically tell them sort of late afternoon, wrap up your caffeine if that's an issue. Because not only does caffeine keep you awake, but it's a diuretic. So for individuals who are saying they're waking up having to go to the bathroom at night, ingesting a whole bunch of caffeine right before you go to bed is probably not a great thing to do.
But I'm wondering if, in terms of the whole idea of sleep hygiene, for somebody looking at what they do or don't do in the time before they go to bed because they're having trouble sleeping.
Right.
If you tell them don't drink any caffeine or ingest any caffeine 4 hours before bed, 6 hours, is there a standard?
I don't know that there's a standard. We usually tell people that caffeine with lunch is fine, then after lunch, let's back off on it.
And what is it about smoking a cigarette that would keep somebody from sleeping? Most of us, I think of cigarettes as something that...
sort of relaxing?
Yeah.
Now, nicotine has...
I mean, despite all the health concerns...
Right.
People who smoke say that it calms them, as opposed to caffeine making them more jittery.
Yeah, I think that for some people that's the case, but nicotine is a stimulant. For everybody who smokes a cigarette to calm down, I guarantee you'll find a couple people who are smoking them to wake up in the middle of their shift. They're working overnight at some factory and on their break, they're out there lighting up to try to get themselves through the rest of that night. So nicotine can stimulate an individual as well.
Well, it's a bit of a personal question, but to you who are listening, how well did you sleep last night? How much sleep do you need in order to maintain optimum daylight operation? Have you found your ability to get to sleep and get the amount of sleep you need has gotten easier or more difficult as you've grown older? 888-WMRA-TALK is how to reach us by phone. That's 888-967-2825. On Facebook, we are listed as Virginia Insight. Neurologist, medical doctor, sleep science researcher, and sleep treatment specialist, Chris Winter is our guest. On our Facebook page, Chris, one of the postings had these questions up at the top. It said, should we read in bed? Should we eat in bed? Is it okay to watch TV in bed? And just what is sleep hygiene, what we were just talking about?
Yep.
So we got a couple of responses to that already, and one of them is Michelle, who says, sure, why not? If these things don't interfere with one's ability to shut down and rest, then what's the harm?
I think that's probably essentially the answer I would give. I think if an individual says, look, I like to unwind in bed, Watch a little TV. Eating in bed, I guess it's great if you're careful about the crumbs, I suppose. Once you are ready to go to sleep, I think it's important that everything be turned off. Occasionally, we get patients who come in and say they feel better if they sleep with the TV on all night. And I'm not a big proponent of that. I think that despite the fact that you may not think it's affecting the quality of your sleep, I think that it probably is. But no, I don't have a big problem with somebody who has a TV in the bedroom if they're telling me that they sleep well during the night, they're satisfied with the quality of their sleep, and they feel great the next day. I don't think it's a big problem. However, that's not the case for many people.
So for people who do have trouble sleeping, is it the idea that you should get out of your bedroom anything that's not connected to sleeping?
Absolutely.
Like, and that's, don't have a computer that you work on in your
bed? You bet. I mean, I think that in this day and age with computers and tablets, cell phones that are becoming much more portable, we want to make sure that the individual is shutting these things down. We usually tell people about an hour before they go to bed at least. So get your emails written, do your work, pay your taxes, whatever it is that you're doing. And then in that hour before you go to bed, let's turn these things off. And by off, really off, I mean, I think that individuals feel like if they just sort of, you know, put the screen saver on, that that's the same thing. But with cell phones, they still beep when you get an instant message. They still chirp when somebody's commented on your comment on Facebook. I mean, I think all those things are not only distracting, but when you start to look at these devices in bed at night, what they're basically doing is shining a light right into your face. And that light to your eyes and to your brain looks an awful lot like the sun. And so one of the things that we're trying to recreate in an individual who's having difficulty sleeping is this idea of the sun coming up and the sun going down. So before we had all this artificial light, people slept differently. And I'm always struck by it when I take my kids camping. My kids, I have three children. We like to go out to Douthat State Park once a year and camp there. And I usually, you know, bring along some pleasure book that I'm all fired up to read. And the last one, I think, was a David Bowie biography I was really excited about. So I was like, you know, I'm going to get these kids in their tent, and I'm going to have all this time to read in the evening. I got my little headlamp on, and I'm going to be ready to go and get the kids in bed, and they're asleep, and I'm sitting there reading, and I'm literally falling asleep as I'm reading this book, and I look at my watch. It's like 8:15. And it's a great illustration of how susceptible our bodies are and our brains are to the idea of being outside, and the only light available to you, besides this, you know, little dinky headlight on my head, is the sun as it sets. And our bodies are pretty sensitive to that, although we just don't see it in our day-to-day lives now. So we want to make sure that our patients, during the day, when they work, as much as they can, they are exposed to as much light and activity as possible. And then in the evening, we want to make sure that lights are really, you know, minimized. We want the dimness to sort of be apparent to our brain. And, you know, some people are very, very sensitive to this. My wife, every time we move houses, I've got to go through and install dimmer switches on all the lights because she can't stand bright light at night. And I think that that's her brain really responding to this idea that it wants to feel that darkness as it sort of comes about. So you don't need to stumble around in your house and trip over things because it's so dark. But you do want to make decisions that really bright lights be turned off. And certainly if you've got a tablet or an iPad or a Kindle and it's shining in your face at 11 o'clock at night, 10 minutes before you want to go to bed, that you minimize this because that light is telling your brain to stop making melatonin because it thinks it's the sun. So these things are extremely important for individuals who have difficulty falling asleep. And I think it also sort of underscores this idea, and when we talk to kids, we talk about a lot of establishing a rhythm to your bedtime. It's not just for little kids. You know, adults can have their shower, their 20 minutes of reading, you know, and some dimmer light, and then go to bed. Try to establish a rhythm that you do the same thing every night right before you go to bed.
Dr. Chris Winter, I'm sure that there are some people listening who've never had any trouble with sleep and don't understand why we're giving this so much attention. But in fact, it can be a big problem in our society that has ripple effects in any number of ways. You have a story that involves a truck driver who grew his hair long that relates to one of those problems. I'm going to ask you about it in a minute.
I hear it in the night. I hear the secrets
been talking a lot about people who can't get to sleep or can't get enough sleep, but there are other kinds of sleep problems. Obviously, we could get into the romantics mentioning one, what you might say if you talk in your sleep, or maybe people who actually walk in their sleep and don't realize that they've gotten out of bed and are doing things while they are asleep. If you have any questions for Dr. Chris Winter, neurologist, sleep medicine researcher, and sleep treatment specialist. Most of our phone lines are open at 888-967-2825. Persuade me, Dr. Winter, that in our society, sleep deprivation is a significant problem.
I'll give it a shot. What you're describing, sleep deprivation affects a lot of people, and there's no group more affected than the individuals who were shift workers or even individuals who work a non-traditional shift. They got to be up at 4 o'clock in the morning and they're off at three, or they're in at noon and off at midnight, whatever the shift is, or even individuals who don't always work that particularly difficult shift that, you know, every now and then once every other week and they have to work a night shift. These individuals, there are millions of them, and probably a quarter of individuals working shift work right now are struggling with it, and so much so that the medical establishment has actually given this a diagnosis, just like dandruff or tonsillitis or whatever. These individuals have what we call shift work disorder, and the only thing you have to have shift work disorder is, A, be a shift worker. Again, doesn't have to be an overnight or graveyard shift worker. You're somebody who works a non-traditional shift, or you're somebody who has two different jobs. You feel sleepy because of it, and you feel that this is interfering with your ability to either be a good worker or be a good person outside of your job. You're struggling as a parent.
It sounds to me like part of what I'm hearing you say, Dr. Chris Winter, is that the ripple effects from these, if you imagine them for a moment, can affect our society as a whole in any number of ways. People having accidents on the job, people having accidents on the road, health problems from not getting enough sleep or being stressed out as a result of not getting enough sleep.
Obesity. You're hitting on all the big ones. The number of automobile accidents is almost always at its peak around 7 o'clock in the morning. And that's when all the shift workers, the overnight people, are getting off of their job and they're driving home.
Well, I wanted to ask you to tell the story about the truck driver and what he did with his hair because of his sleep problems. But for some reason, as soon as I had mentioned that a few minutes ago, all of our lines lit up. So,
hello, shift workers of Central Virginia. Welcome.
I want to get to the truck driver hair story before the end, but let's make room for some of these people who've been patiently holding on the phone line here. We have Julie, who's driving somewhere. Julie, we hope you're doing it safely, and if it's all possible for you to pull off and be safe, we'd hate to have you crash while you're talking to us, but you're on the air with Dr. Chris Winter. I think you're on the air. Julie, are you there? Well, it looks like maybe we lost Julie, or maybe she's in the process of pulling off someplace. Let's go to Orange now, and Jonathan, you're on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for sleep treatment, Dr. Chris Winter, please. It looks like maybe we're having a technical problem with our phone system. Okay, so we're going to have somebody reboot the system. It may be that people got so excited and all called in so quickly that something happened.
We're crashing the phone lines. The system cannot handle the volume.
In the meantime, if anybody's not driving and they're close to a computer while we're getting our phone system fixed, if you want to ask your question online, you can go to our Facebook page, which is listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight on Facebook. Let's go to the truck driver.
Absolutely. Here. And I've got to give credit to a colleague and excellent sleep doctor in his own right, Will Hammond at Martha Jefferson Hospital, told me the story of the gentleman that was a truck driver and struggled with sleepiness, most likely because he had a second job. And what he would do is he grew out the left side of his hair so he could actually roll it up into the window of his cab as he drove down the road. And if he fell asleep and his head sort of bobbed forward, it would jerk his hair and wake him up. And there are individuals who have these types of little ploys all over the place. I have individuals who will sit on sharp objects to make themselves feel uncomfortable, or they will put the back of their seat all the way down like they were reclining. So they actually have to sit up without a back of a seat, rolling down the window when it's freezing outside. And there's all kinds of ploys to use to try to overcome that really powerful drive to fall asleep. And hopefully these things are helping people, but more often than not, the reason why individuals come to see us is because they've failed. And it doesn't have to fail for very long before you're across the median and in the oncoming lane of traffic. So
these things are important. It is kind of a scary thought. That's that picture
that
you've given us in our mind of somebody growing out one side of their hair long enough so they can stick it in the window for their nighttime job, their second job, mm-hmm. of driving a truck for several hours at night. They're on the highway with everybody else,
yep.
and they're taking these desperate attempts, in this case, putting their hair out the window and rolling the window up so it'll tug if they start to nod off.
I mean,
it seems to me that there probably are a fair number of the rest of us put in danger,
you bet.
On places like the highway because other people aren't getting enough sleep.
I love my job, and I'm passionate about sleep. One of the more unfortunate parts of my job, I've been asked to testify in cases where individuals have gotten hurt because they've fallen asleep behind the wheel of a car. And some of the stories are just staggering of individuals who are up all night, helping friends out, do some things. They pull an all-nighter. The next day, they're awake at their job. They go have a massive carbohydrate-laden Thanksgiving type of meal. They drink a couple beers, and then they're on this very dark, straight, boring road for an hour trying to drive home, and they inevitably crash. And you know, people are injured and killed every year because of sleepy drivers. And when you start adding alcohol, even small amounts of alcohol, to a driver who's already sleepy, the result is a 1+1=4 kind of thing, big time. And there's not a lot. It's hard to know what to do about these types of things. Laws have tried to be passed about what it means to be a sleepy driver and how does that relate to driving while intoxicated, but laws are often very inconsistent and not easily applied. So it is a big problem. We are all out there with these individuals. So it's very important that if you're struggling with excessive sleepiness or your spouse is struggling with excessive sleepiness, that these individuals seek help before they wrap their car around a telephone pole.
Tell me what goes on in a sleep medicine study. What happens in that?
Certainly. So the polysomnogram, the technical term for it, is a night where you spend in a sleep center and we monitor various aspects of your sleep. It's an easy study, a lot easier than a colonoscopy, I can assure you of that, although colonoscopy is equally as important, where an individual will come in usually around the evening to a sleep center. Most sleep centers are set up sort of like they're a hotel kind of experience, even if they're in a hospital. I think Martha Jefferson Sleep Medicine Center is unique in that we are actually physically in a hotel, 8 of the rooms of a Hilton hotel right next to the new Martha Jefferson Hospital are actually the sleep center. So these individuals are coming into an experience that's very familiar to them, very non-threatening, no bells and whistles going off during the night. And these individuals come into a suite that they're very sort of familiar with, except they're watching Sports Center, relax, work on their laptop. When it's time to go to bed, a wonderful technician will come in and he or she will tape or glue some little wires to various parts of your body. None of them hurt. None of them are uncomfortable or embarrassing. And then you just sleep. You can move around as much as you want. You can bring your favorite pillow. If you have to get up and go to the bathroom, you can do it. Everybody has this idea that you're strapped to the table sort of like Frankenstein was when he was being created, and you can't move and you can't do anything. And that's really not the case. Even in the last few years, just the technology of these sleep centers studies have become much less and less invasive. And you sleep the night, you wake up. Our sleep center actually buys you breakfast in the hospital or the hotel restaurant in the morning, and you're free to go. And most people just get up and shower and go to work. Now you can lounge around in bed and read the USA Today if you want to. It's a very different from what most people think of when they think of a medical test or procedure. It's not a cardiac catheterization. It's basically spend the night in a nice hotel and wake up. And
the obvious follow-up question is, what kinds of things do you look for? What kinds of things do you and your fellow researchers discover in the middle of this? But once again, we have Julie,
Julie.
Who's called us back a couple of times.
Thanks heavens. Julie's here.
I think it's possible we can actually hear her now.
Julie, I think so.
Julie, you're somewhere in the Harrisonburg area?
Yes, I am right now. I actually live in Grottoes, but
thank you for your patience and your persistence. Please go ahead with your question for sleep specialist Dr. Chris Winter, please.
Hello, Dr. Chris Winters. I have always been a night owl.
Yes.
And my dad has pictures of me like up at 2 a.m, just laughing, playing in my crib.
Yes.
And I have always had trouble sleeping at night. I have worked at night. I worked during the day and have had trouble sleeping at night. So do you have any reason for that? Do you have people who naturally just cannot sleep at night?
Sure. Julie, you bring up a lot of really interesting things, some of the things that are really important to me, because I consider myself a bit of a night owl. And what you're referring to, what Julie's talking about, this concept of being a night owl or a morning lark or a morning person, we refer to that as your chronotype, Julie. So what that means is that everybody out there is probably geared a little bit more toward the morning or a little bit more toward the evening. And some of us are quite far on one end of the scale or others quite far on the other end. And so these things are for the most part, they change over time. So if you think about a high school student, for the most part, high school students like to stay up late and they want to sleep in until noon. And then when I go visit my in-laws, they're wanting to watch McNeil Lair at 7 o'clock after having had dinner at 4, and they're in bed at 8.
Right.
You know, so these things tend to change. So for the most part, when we're younger, we tend to be more night owl-oriented. And when we're older, we tend to be more morning-oriented. But that's not always the case. These tendencies are genetic. So chances are, if you're a night owl, somebody else in your family, maybe your father, he was a night owl, too. I guess somebody had to stay up to take your picture at 2 o'clock in the morning, right?
Yeah, he was. He was a postman, so he had to get up, and he had to be at the post office at, like, 3 o'clock.
Yep.
For some years, and then he became a postmaster, so, you know, he was up later in the day.
Yep. Julie, if I could ask a question, do you feel like you get enough sleep?
It all depends. If I take a nap, you know, during the day. I mean, you know, my idea of morning is waking up at like 10 o'clock in the morning. You know, that's my idea of getting up in the morning.
And I think a lot of people, it's always been my assertion that we don't choose our jobs. I think our jobs tend to choose, or our sleep patterns tend to choose us, meaning that my wife is an incredibly intelligent woman. I'm not sure she would have made a good doctor, not because she couldn't handle the classes. I don't know that she could have handled the schedule. She's a very, very morning-oriented person.
Well,
so
you
when
know,
you look at...
I was in the medical field for almost 25 years.
There you go. And most people, I think, in the medical field, when you look around, when I looked around my medical school class or certainly my residency class when I was at UVA, I mean, we're all night-oriented. I mean, you don't get too far in the process if you can't hack a night or two without sleep or multiple nights without sleep. So I think the chronotype you're talking about is important. It's genetic, like we talked about, so it can be passed down. There are clock and purr genes that tend to dictate this, but you can change it to some degree if you want to. But it's often sort of it's an upstream kind of process where you can affect these changes through appropriate uses of medication and light and exercise. But as soon as you sort of back off on these processes, then a lot of times you sort of revert back to the place where you were. I mean, I'm a night owl, but having a job and having a family has sort of pushed me more towards a morning type of schedule. But, you know, as soon as my family goes out of town or I go out of town and I have sort of control of my own sleep, I'm like you. 10 o'clock in the morning is when I'd like to start my day, and I'd like to go to bed closer to 3. So there are things to do about it if it's bothersome to you. But for a lot of people, that's sort of what you've got. And one of the things we do with we work with a lot of professional athletes. We did a very interesting study where we looked at Major League Baseball players, and there's ways you can sort of characterize how much of a night owl or how much of a morning person you are. And we sought out to see, well, if you're a morning type person and you're a pitcher for a baseball team, or you're a night owl and you're a batter, do you actually bat better at night than you do during the day? And the answer is you do. And so a lot of professional teams and college teams have looked at this and said, wow, you know, all of our games are at night. Maybe we need to be looking at these types of things to find our players, or when we're drafting players, is it worthwhile looking at these types of things? So these are some of the questions that we ask about chronotype as it relates to more practical day-to-day things.
Julie, thank you so much for your call. Once again, our lines are all busy, but it looks like our phone line system is working now. So actually, as soon as Julie hangs up, we'll have one line open at 888-WMRA-TALK if you want to talk with sleep specialist Dr. Chris Winter. Julie, thank you again. Now to Orange, where Jonathan was persistent and patient and called back. Jonathan, thank you for doing that. You're on the air.
Thank you. My pleasure. I would like to know from Dr. Winter, I am a 69-year-old male, recently retired from Martha Jefferson, and I'm in excellent health, good vital signs. I can go to bed and go to sleep pretty much as my head hits the pillow, but for the last couple of years then, at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, I wake up and I'm wide awake, and often I just get up and do things.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to know if there's any kind of thing I might look at to fix that, because by the middle of the afternoon, then I'm really tired.
Yep. You've hit on a lot of topics here, and I appreciate your call. The first is the concept of sleep needs. So we've talked about people who feel like they sleep too much and people who feel like they're not getting enough sleep. We've talked about individuals who like to go to bed at night or late at night, and people who like to go to bed earlier in the evening. What we really haven't touched on is how much sleep do you need? So this is a very important topic, because there's a gentleman on TV who's good friends with Oprah and wears scrubs all the time who is getting this wrong. Individual sleep need varies from person to person. I cannot sit here on the radio and say everybody who's listening to me needs 8 hours of sleep at night. It's important, because while you can say in one breath, Americans are not sleeping enough, and probably be correct, you can't say that every person listening to this needs to get 8 hours of sleep to feel their best, because there are certainly individuals who do not need and cannot achieve 8 hours of sleep at night, and when they set out to do so, problems arise. So if you don't take anything away from this, please keep that in mind. Number two, as we get older, we tend to require less sleep. So as a 69-year-old gentleman, even though you're in great health, maybe you don't require as much sleep now as you did before. And we'll talk about the relevance of that in just a bit.
We can hear the music telling us we've got just a bit before we're going to hit the break. So, Jonathan, please hold on. And Chris Winter is going to continue his answer to your obviously terrific question in a bit more than 1 minute. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. And now, neurologist, medical doctor, sleep science researcher, and sleep treatment specialist Chris Winter is going to continue his response to Jonathan's question.
Jonathan, so Jonathan just asked about his sleep as he's retired from Martha Jefferson Hospital. He's in excellent health, but he's finding he's not able to stay asleep the way he wants to at night. And so we talked about sleep needs. So the first part of the answer would be, maybe you don't require as much sleep now as you have in the past. So it's important that we're constantly sort of vigilant and looking out for that, because we might need to adjust things. And one of the cruel tricks of life is that when we're young and we've got kids running around setting things on fire in the house, and we've got jobs that are demanding, all we want to do is sleep more, yet we have no time to do it. And then you flip things around and you retire, the kids are gone and out of the house, you've got all this time to sleep, yet your body's saying, we don't really want to sleep so much anymore. So there's a little bit of that maybe going on.
What Jonathan also said was that he does find that he's sleepy in the afternoons. Uh-huh. Did I get that right, Jonathan?
Exactly. So what he's saying is that he gets in bed and he falls asleep as soon as his head hits the pillow. So he's having no real difficulty with sleep initiation. He sleeps until about 2 o'clock in the morning, and then he wakes up. And the real question, the real red flag in this is, what's waking Jonathan up at 2 o'clock in the morning? And one thing you might want to consider in an individual who's 69 years old and who is male, perhaps he has a little bit of sleep apnea during the night. And a lot of individuals with sleep apnea find that they have no difficulty falling asleep at night, but they have a lot of difficulty sustaining their sleep during the night. And when we start to dream during the night, when people dream, they're actually paralyzed. So a lot of the muscles that help us breathe get paralyzed, and people wake up because they can't catch their breath. And they're not aware of this, but they find themselves awake. They get up and go to the bathroom, and then they have trouble getting back to sleep. Then the third part of this question is the fact that he's retired. So perhaps this was going on before you retired, Jonathan, But because you really had no options in terms of either when you got up or resting during the day, when people retire and they feel tired during the day, they sit down and have their lunch and they're done, they stretch out on the couch, there's really nothing preventing you from falling asleep at that time. So the question I would have for you, Jonathan, is do you ever take naps during the day?
I do. I try to. About an hour's nap at 2 o'clock.
Yep. And does that help?
Oh, yes.
So here's the issue with the napping. If you've got an individual, if you've got a kid, I got three kids, and they eat pretty well. But if you have a kid who doesn't eat their dinner, the first question I would ask the parent is, okay, whether you're having trouble getting your kids to eat dinner, what happens when they get off the bus? Well, they sit down in the kitchen, they have a snack. They have some chips and a couple cookies and an apple. Well, just because you're napping during the day, that sleep counts. I always tell people that when you nap, that hour of sleep that you're getting has got to be taken from somewhere. It's not bonus sleep, so to speak, meaning that when you sleep for that hour, you've taken away a little bit of drive to sleep at night. And that's common. People feel the need. Well, if I'm sleepy during the day, I'll nap and feel better. But the question is, when you take that nap, what adjustments have you made to your sleep at night? So what I would say is if you're having difficulty staying asleep during the night, the first thing I would do is eliminate your nap during the day. And I would say that to you. I would say that to the parent of a five-year-old who says, look, Chris, we can't get our kid to sleep through the night. Well, tell me about his kid's day. Well, he gets up and we take him to school. He goes to a little private preschool about an hour away and he falls asleep in the car. We get him to the preschool. He runs around the preschool during the day. They take a two-hour nap during the preschool. And this is a true story. I mean, this is somebody told me this. We pick him up and we drive home. He falls asleep in the car there. And doggone it, we can't get him to fall asleep at night. What time does he go to bed? He goes to bed at 8. And what time do you all need to get up in the morning? 6 o'clock. Well, that kid is basically getting hours of sleep during the day, so his drive to sleep at night is not as good. So the first thing I would tell you to do, Jonathan, is get rid of the nap. As painful and as awful as that might sound, as cruel as I may seem to you, I would say get rid of the nap and replace it with a little bit of exercise. And then if you're continuing to find that despite the fact that you're still going to bed at the same time, so don't take away the nap, but go to bed an hour earlier. Take away the nap, go to bed at your standard bedtime, wake up at your normal time. So if you have difficulty sleeping at night, that doesn't give you freedom or allowance to sleep in late the next day. So you don't have a job anymore, so you can do it. I don't want you to. I want you to pretend like you're still on that job schedule. And you get up at your normal time, go about your day's business, no naps. And if you continue to wake up during the night, despite the fact that you've really tidied up your schedule, I think it's probably time to talk to your doctor and say, look, I shouldn't be waking up here, and I am. I've done everything that Dr. Winter told me to do, and it's still going on. It might be time for a sleep study.
Very good.
Jonathan, thank you so much. Phone number 888-WMRA. Talk guest Chris Winter, medical doctor, neurologist, sleep science researcher, and sleep treatment specialist. Next to talk to him, we go to Scottsville. Cindy, thank you for joining us. Your question or comment for Dr. Winter, please.
Yeah, hi, thank you. I am almost 53, and I've had insomnia for probably 15 years. And due to stress at my job in the beginning, and then it just became chronic. And I was on Ambien at one time. My doctor gave me that, but then she stopped it because, you can't stay on it. And it was great. I mean, it really did help me. Now I'm really struggling because I don't want to be on sleeping pills, but I absolutely every night wake up several times and I work and I have to be up usually around 6:30, but I will wake up anywhere between 1 and 4 a.m. or 5 and just cannot go back to sleep. I just lay there and
what time do you go to bed? What time do you go to bed, Cindy?
Okay, I go about 9:30, 10.
Okay. You laughed. Why did you laugh?
Because sometimes it's later than that. I try to go sooner.
Why? Why do you try to go to bed sooner, do you think?
Well, because I feel like I could get more sleep in.
So that's strike number one, Cindy, right there. And that's the sort of the common mistake that most people with insomnia have. This idea that my sleep is really miserable right now. Maybe if I go to bed an hour earlier tonight, I'll be sleepier. And that's sort of like talking to somebody about going out to eat, and you're trying to make your plans about meeting this person out at a restaurant, and saying to them, you know what, why don't we meet at 7 o'clock? And you say to them, you know what, I'm not usually not hungry at seven, and the person's saying, well, okay, well, why don't we meet at 6 o'clock? I think you would look to that person and say, no, I don't think you understand. I'm not hungry at 7 o'clock. I'm definitely not going to be hungry at 6 o'clock. We need to meet at 8 o'clock perhaps for dinner. And a lot of patients with insomnia make that mistake that when their sleep is failing them, they try to get quote-unquote extra sleep. And I'm going to tell you, Cindy, that's you're moving the bedtime in the wrong direction. You know, I always ask people, I say, well, look, you go to bed at 9:30. How long does it take you to fall asleep? Oh, Dr. Winter, takes me an hour or two. My question always at that point is, why do you go to bed at 9:30 if it's taking you that long to fall asleep? And you always get this very puzzled look like, you know what? I never really thought about that. Your brain does a very good job of figuring out what it needs to eat, figuring out how it can get some fluids in it, and figuring out how it can sleep. And so the first thing you've got to do, Cindy, is establish a wake-up time, which it sounds like you've got very good, 6:30. The second thing is we've got to figure out how much sleep you need, just like our last caller. You know, that this changes over time. So how much you needed when you were young may be very different from for now that you're 53 years old.
Oh, and I love my sleep.
Well, that's okay. And that's great. I love mine too. That's why I do what I do, I think. I think I've loved it ever since I was a kid. So the first thing I want you to understand is I don't want you to fear not going to sleep. And everybody who has insomnia, that is at the core of the problem. If you're describing your insomnia as chronic, there is a chronic fear of all the terrible, awful, no good things that'll happen if you don't fall asleep. And I don't want you to fear them because, you know what, I can tell you from an expert's opinion, they're not that bad. The second thing is that I don't want you to go to sleep until you feel sleepy. You need Ambien to fall asleep about like you need a pill, like an appetite stimulant to get hungry for dinner. Does that mean that at dinner time you're always hungry for dinner? No. You may sometimes go to dinner and not feel hungry, so you skip it.
Well, I can fall asleep fine, but it's the waking up during the night and not being able to go back to sleep. And what I would often do is I would split a pill and just an 8-hour pill, and then I would say, okay, I'm going to get at least I'll get four hours more
again,
more of my sleep.
I want what you're describing is what we would call sleep maintenance insomnia. And I can give every one of our listeners right now what you've got if I told them this. I want you to change your sleeping pattern, WMRA listener, and I want you to go to bed at 5 o'clock this afternoon. So you've got an hour to get your stuff done because bedtime now is going to be 5 o'clock. And I want you to keep your wake-up time wherever it is, 6, 7, 8 o'clock. So all the listeners are going to say, well, this guy sounds like he knows what he's talking about. I'm going to do it because it sounds like getting more sleep would be a healthy thing to do. And there'd be a group of people out there who would probably be able to fall asleep at 5 o'clock. If I got into bed at 5 o'clock, I could probably fall asleep. But there's no way in the world I'm going to be able to maintain that sleep until my alarm clock goes off at 6:45 tomorrow morning. So what does that mean? Is that a problem? Do I have a condition? No. I'm asking my brain to sustain sleep for a much longer period than it wants to. It's kind of like me deciding I like pizza. I love pizza, by the way. And me deciding I'm going to go get two large pizzas. I'm not going to share any with my wonderful host right now. I'm going to eat it all myself. So I can have the plan to do that, but I can assure you that when I sit down to implement that plan, I'll make it through halfway through one of the pizzas, and I'm going to feel sick to my stomach. I'm going to give up. So I've got the plan to do it. Doesn't mean my body can carry it out. I think that you're in the same place. You're trying to go to bed at 9:30, 10 o'clock, sleep until 6:30. Your body doesn't want to sleep quite that long. And so
Cindy,
what I would say is go to bed late. Go to bed later.
I hope that helps. We're running short on time. So I'm going to leave you here with thanks for joining us here on Virginia Insight. And once again, my apologies to all of the people we haven't gotten to because of our earlier problems with the phone system and all the people who've posted to us on Facebook now. We are not going to be able to answer all of those questions on the air, but I will ask Dr. Winter if he has time to give me replies by email to everybody who's written to us on Facebook.
Absolutely.
And I will send those comments back to you on Facebook. There is one here on Facebook, though, that we really have to get to, Chris. This is from a physician who said, this is such an important issue I find in my practice. So will you please ask him to comment on the use of, I guess it's called hypnotics, like Ambien, and short-term use and the risks and benefits, including what she calls rebound insomnia.
Sure. This is a great question. I appreciate you taking the time out of your practice to write. I think that the issue of a hypnotic or a sleeping pill, Ambien, Lunesta, Sonata, Trazodone, whatever it is that you're taking, the issue really becomes, why are you taking it? The illustration I always give to my patients is this. If you come to see me and you've got blood pouring out of your ear, you may allow me to say, wow, that's a lot of blood coming out of your ear. I'm going to put some cotton in your ear. I'm going to wrap up your head in a bandage. And I'm going to let you go home. I want you to come back and see me in 2 days. Okay, you think, well, it's a little strange, but I'll do it. So you leave, you come back. I take the bandage off and the blood comes pouring out of your ear again. How many times will you let me take the bandage off, see the blood coming out of your ear, call it something like blood coming out of your ear syndrome, wrap you up and send you out of my office? And you'd probably let me do it once, maybe twice before you'd say, look, aren't you going to figure out where this blood's coming from, doctor? Because this is really starting to concern me. That is insomnia. Insomnia is not really a diagnosis. It's a symptom. So for everybody who's going there to their doctor once every month to get their refill of their sleeping pill, month after month after month, I think the danger becomes you start to lose sight of the fact that you can sleep without a pill. I mean, look at what happened to Michael Jackson. I mean, this poor guy got so upset and nervous about his inability to fall asleep that he's got a guy coming into his house and basically anesthetizing him. And there are people, I'm sure, that are desperate enough that they would look towards having that done if it were available to them. So I think that the short-term use of hypnotics, great. If the Republican candidates for president really upset you, and that's making you have difficulty falling asleep at night, great. Take Ambien until the primaries are over and move on with your life. If you're going through a divorce, a loss of a loved one, loss of a job, I mean, there are reasons, travel, shift work, there are reasons to episodically take a sleeping aid. But if
not all of us understand what a hypnotic is.
Yeah, so hypnotic sleeping aid, same thing.
Oh, so in essence,
any pill that you're taking with
you
the
should
express
not be using
purpose,
long-term.
There is no real hypnotic out there that was designed to be used long-term. I mean,
so even
again,
Benadryl is not a good idea.
Yeah, long-term. I mean, again, so I mean, there's no. I mean, you could argue about the harmfulness of it. The real question is why. It's like me selling you the wonderful listener. I've got this great pill that when you take it, it will ensure that you get hungry for every one of your meals during the day. You'll never have to worry about that again. And your question to me would probably be like, well, this sounds like a pretty good idea because I would hate to not miss a meal, but this has never really been a big problem for me before. I think that my body does a pretty good job of telling me when it's time to eat.
So Chris,
I would argue that sleep, same thing.
We got less than a minute left.
Yep.
And I promised that I was going to try and get you to explain a little bit of what you look for in a sleep study. I don't know how much you can do in less than a minute,
yep,
but at least you told people why it's not scary to have it done.
Right.
What do they get out of it, or what does a doctor see as a result of somebody having a sleep study?
Certainly. So when you come to our office after your sleep study, and I would say if you're having a sleep study, you make sure that whatever sleep doctor ordered it, you sit down with them and talk to them about your sleep study, that you do not get the information from your sleep study secondhand, number one, because it's much too important of a study for you not to understand exactly what's happening with it.
Now 30 seconds.
Now we go. Here we go. You can find out how much you're sleeping, and some people don't think they sleep at all, and they end up sleeping 7 hours. We can find out what your brain is doing. Are you in deep sleep? Are you in dream sleep? Are you grinding your teeth? Are you having acid reflux at night? Seizures? How is your breathing? Do you kick your legs or have restless leg syndrome or periodic limb movements? We haven't even touched on that today. So we get
actually, those can be serious because they can be waking people up constantly through the night and
absolutely
affecting their quality of sleep.
Absolutely. So all the callers today who say that, look, like Jonathan, he says, I wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning. Maybe some leg kicking is waking him up, and my advice to him won't be quite enough to get him sleeping through the night. That's why you need to talk to a sleep doctor if your sleep questions are not getting answered.
Our guest has been the president of Charlottesville Neurology and Medicine, as well as director of the Martha Jefferson Sleep Medicine Center, Dr. Christopher Winter. And those of you who have written on Facebook, we will get those questions to Chris and ask him to respond. Chris, thank you so much for your time.
And you're welcome. And you can friend us on Charlottesville Neurology and Sleep Medicine on Facebook if you want to write to us directly.
Also,
that would
if
be great.
You go to our Virginia Insight page on WMRA.org, there are links to contact Dr. Winter there as well. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham, I think. Tom Graham? Yeah, that's the name. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.